My name is Nikki Strong, and this is VOA 1, The Hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Dan Friedel.
And I'm Katie Weaver. This program is aimed at English learners. So we speak slowly, and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English.
Today on the podcast, we learn from Gregory Stockel about a process called natural farming in India. Then, John Russell is here to tell us about a trend among young technology workers who lose their jobs. Following John, you will hear the Higher Education Report. And the episode would not be complete without a look into the sky with Anna Mateo and words and their stories. Now, here's Gregory.
There is a strong smell that comes off Ratna Raju's farm in the southern Andhra Pradesh state of India. The smell comes from a mixture of natural materials like cow urine and unrefined sugar. Raju says the natural materials help grow and protect crops in an area often hit by extreme weather and heat. Farmers like Raju say natural materials protect their crops from climate change because the soil can hold more water. And they say the crop's stronger roots help plants deal with strong winds. Supporters say natural farming is successful in the state because of government support. Now they say these methods should be expanded across India's agricultural lands. They point to climate change and decreasing profits that have led to several farmers' protests this year. Without government support for natural farming, most Indian farmers still use chemical pesticides and fertilizers. That puts them at risk when extreme weather hits. Many farmers are calling for greater federal and state investment to help them deal with climate change. Raju has seen the gains of using natural methods. Last December, a storm called Cyclone Michaung brought heavy rainfall across India's southeastern coast. It flooded towns and fields. Early studies showed more than 240,000 hectares of crops were destroyed in Andhra Pradesh state. Raju said, "The rainwater on our farms seeped into the ground in one day. The soil can take in more water because it is less dense than soil with pesticide. Soil with pesticide is dry." He added that planting different crops throughout the year helps keep the soil healthy. But his neighbor Shrikant Kanapala's farm was flooded for 4 days after the storm. Kanapala uses chemical pesticides and fertilizers on his farm. And he said after seeing Raju's crops hold strong, while his failed, made him want to learn about other farming methods. Kanapala estimates that he lost up to $600 because of the storm, a sizable amount for a small farmer in India. "For the next planting season, I plan to use natural farming methods too," he said. Raitu Sadikara Samsta is a government-backed organization launched in 2016 to support natural farming. It found that government support has resulted in an estimated 700,000 farmers changing to natural methods in Andhra Pradesh. And the state hopes that all of its 6 million farmers will use natural farming by the end of 2030. Mirabi Chunduru is one of the first in the area to start using natural farming. She said she changed to the methods after her husband's health worsened. She believes his health worsened because of extended exposure to harmful pesticides. Health effects of different pesticides have not been studied in detail. But farmers around the world have long claimed extended exposure has caused health problems. In India, 63 farmers died in the western state of Maharashtra in 2017. It is believed to be linked to a pesticide containing the chemical diphenthiourine. It is currently banned in the European Union, but not in India. Natural farming supporters say many officials still trust farming methods that use chemical fertilizers and pesticides to produce the most crops. This year, the Indian government has set $20 billion in fertilizer financial support, but it only set aside $55 million for natural farming. Chunduru hopes that will change. She said, with natural farming, we can provide nutrient-rich food, soil, and physical health to future generations. I'm Gregory Stockel.
In a social media video, American Grace Hsu told her 300,000 TikTok followers she was likely to lose her job. She was right, she tells them in a later video. But she was planning to seek a different career anyway, as a content creator. I guess the decision has been made on my behalf, she tells viewers in the video posted earlier this year. The universe has spoken. The job market in the United States seems to be holding strong, with employers adding 303,000 workers in March. The jobless rate has remained below 4% for 26 straight months. That is the longest continuous period at that rate since the 1960s. But the numbers do not necessarily ease worries for thousands of people who have found themselves out of work. Hiring has largely taken place in only a few industries. Technology and finance companies have added just a small number of jobs in the last 12 months. Some recently jobless Americans, like the 26-year-old Hsu, are turning away from traditional employment. Instead, they are building a new career path through online content creation. They aim to make money from brand deals and advertising by producing social media videos. Labor and employment expert Sarah Damaski of Penn State University in Pennsylvania said, I think most employees look at employers now and no longer think that they are going to find security, permanent security, in a job. Damaski added, I think it makes it less risky to do something like go and be a content creator because employment with a traditional employer is so much riskier. In an estimated $250 billion industry, 4% of global content creators make more than $100,000 every year, says Goldman Sachs research. YouTube, considered by creators to be one of the best platforms for earning money, has more than 3 million channels in its YouTube Partner Program. A spokesperson said the platform paid producers more than $70 billion in the last 3 years. Meanwhile, TikTok, which faces the threat of a U.S. national ban that could hurt the video creation business, has seen a 15% growth in user monetization, a company spokesperson said. Many people turn to full-time content creation only after they have seen good results from putting in the work, said Brooke Aaron Duffy, an expert with Cornell University in New York. The pandemic also changed how U.S. employees consider their work lives. Many seek more control over their schedules and the ability to work from home. In February, nearly 440,000 people applied to start their own businesses, up nearly 50% from a monthly 300,000 just before the pandemic, the U.S. Census Bureau says. Among those who started businesses are content creators, although they likely make up only a small percentage of the total. For Xu, the pandemic permitted her time to rediscover her hobbies. She started making content at that time as At Amazing-ish Grace on TikTok. She built up a following. Even when she left her banking job to move into the tech field for a better work-life balance, she kept on making content. Xu lost her job last summer. She said she wondered at the time if she should go to content creation full-time. She had a deep fear of ruining things she loved by turning them into work. But the job loss sped up her plans. You just have to have this belief that, like, once your life is wide open for something, it will come, she said. Otherwise, you'll drive yourself crazy thinking about it. I'm John Russell.
The cost of attending a top college in the United States could be as much as $95,000 this year. That total includes tuition, as well as meals and living space at the school. But college officials say they are helping students with financial support, and those from poor families may be required to pay only 10% of the costs. Wellesley College, a private women's school near Boston, Massachusetts, will cost $92,000 for 2024-2025. The college's famous graduates include former First Lady Hillary Clinton, Secretary of State Madeleine Albright, and television broadcaster Diane Sawyer. Philip Levine is an economics professor at Wellesley. Levine said, "The figure is clearly a lot of money, and it catches people's attention for sure." He added, "But for most people, that is not how much they're going to pay." Wellesley says nearly 60% of its students receive financial aid, and the average amount of aid is $62,000, cutting the total cost by two-thirds. For American students, the amount of financial aid makes a difference. This year, however, many are concerned because the U.S. Department of Education is having major problems with a new online form called the FAFSA. The document helps students apply for financial aid. One concern is that American-born children of undocumented immigrants must provide information about their parents. But the parents may not have the needed identity documentation or may be worried about showing themselves to the government. Mark Kantrowitz is a financial aid expert. He called the new online process an absolute disaster. Kantrowitz said the problems might prevent students from applying for aid. That in turn could lower the number of students going to college and force some schools to close. Levine of Wellesley said his research has shown that students from lower-income families have been receiving more financial aid over the past 6 years. But he worries that the difference between the advertised cost and the actual cost will keep some students from applying to top colleges like Wellesley. Levine said people should be making educational decisions based on the actual cost they have to pay. Schools on the list of the most costly include the University of Southern California, Harvey Mudd College of California, the University of Pennsylvania, Brown University, Dartmouth College, and Boston University. Other top colleges, including Columbia University and the University of Chicago, have not listed their cost of attendance, but they could turn out to be over $90,000 as well. Harvard University says its cost of attendance will be $91,000 next year, but the school notes that the average cost for families is only $13,000, and many pay nothing at all. Harvard can support many of its students because its endowment is more than $50 billion, the largest of any university in the U.S. The College Board is a nonprofit education organization that conducts the SAT college admission test. The group's research shows the average cost at private colleges and universities last year was $60,000. At public colleges and universities, the cost was $29,000 for students from the same state. It was $47,000 for out-of-state students. Kantrowitz said that although many receive financial aid, most students still need an additional $10,000 for college each year. So families are forced to borrow that money or come up with that money from some other source, he added. Even with the rising costs, Kantrowitz said he believes college is still a good investment as long as borrowing does not get out of control and students complete their studies. He warns, if you drop out, you have the debt, but not the degree that can help you repay the debt. I'm Dan Friedel.
VOA Learning English has launched a new program for children. It is called Let's Learn English with Anna. The new course aims to teach children American English through asking and answering questions and experiencing fun situations. For more information, visit our website, learningenglish.voanews.com.
I'm Katie Weaver, and you're listening to the Learning English Podcast. You just heard from my co-host, Dan Friedel, about the high cost of attending college in the U.S. He's here now to talk a bit more about the story. Hi, Dan.
Hi, Katie.
So, Dan, you mentioned that some of the most respected colleges and universities in the U.S. are expecting their cost of attendance. That means the cost of the classes themselves, books, living spaces, food, everything, will be over $90,000 for the upcoming school year. How did college wind up getting so costly in America?
Well, Katie, I saw a very similar story written 10 years ago about college costs getting high. And back then, the cost of the top colleges was about $42,000 per year. So prices have more than doubled. It is shocking. Experts say the increase is a combination of many factors. Inflation makes everything more costly. State governments are providing less money for higher education. There are fewer young people of college age right now, so all students have to pay a little bit more. And some schools probably say their sports coaches are getting more money than ever, so the cost for everyone goes up too. It is not just one thing.
But the story argues that very few students at a school such as the University of Southern California will actually pay $95,000 this year, right?
Well, that is true. Some universities say the actual cost of attendance for the student who pays the middle amount among all students is much lower. But that still means a good number of students are paying close to what we would call sticker price in the U.S. That is a term that is taken from auto sales, by the way. The sticker on the window of a new car shows the price.
That's right, Dan. But the sticker price is usually the starting point for a negotiation. I imagine it could be very difficult to negotiate with a famous college.
You're right, Katie. Most families are not in a position to negotiate with Columbia, Brown, or Harvard. That means new parents need to start thinking about paying for college as soon as a child is born. It is scary to think college costs could double again in 10 years.
You're right, Dan. It is scary. I'm glad my kids are almost done with college. That's a relief. I feel for those young families. Thanks for the update, Dan.
You're welcome, Katie. I'm always happy to help.
Now, words and their stories from VOA Learning English. Looking up at a star-filled night sky can be one of the most beautiful sights to see. It can fill you with awe and amazement. It can also take us away from our worldly troubles and problems. A long time ago, people may have looked to the stars for more than inspiration and entertainment. Ancient stargazers may have looked to the stars to find good luck. In modern times, people who believe in astrology also look to the stars for guidance and advice on how to improve their lives. Stars have served us in many ways throughout human history. So it is not surprising that we have an expression that thanks them. When we say, "Thank your lucky stars," we are expressing gratitude for something. We use this expression to show our appreciation for something good in our lives. For example, I thank my lucky stars for my health and also a career that I love. We often use the expression with the word should. For example, my friend should thank her lucky stars for her amazing brother. He has helped her many times over the years. This saying means that you should be grateful for your good luck. Thanking the stars in ancient times may have been a type of superstition. But these days, it simply means we are thankful. Let's hear what some of my coworkers thank their lucky stars for. First is Dan Friedel.
I thank my lucky stars for the people who came before me, and taught me lessons about life I put into practice today.
And here is Dorothy Gundy.
I thank my lucky stars that the rain has stopped and the children can play outdoors.
Sometimes we use the word count in this expression. Saying I count my lucky stars doesn't change the meaning. For example, I count my lucky stars for my family and friends. Now let's hear this expression used in a conversation.
Are you okay? You look terrible.
I rear-ended a garbage truck on my drive over here.
Oh no! Was anyone hurt?
No, thankfully. But I really damaged my car. It's going to cost a lot to fix it.
Well, crashing into the back of a trash truck will do that. What happened?
I dropped a piece of chocolate and looked down for a minute to find it. When I looked up, the trash truck was stopped right in front of me.
Wow. You should count your lucky stars that you weren't seriously injured.
I know. I'm very thankful. And I need to be more careful. But in my defense, it was really good chocolate.
We here at VOA Learning English thank our lucky stars for all of our listeners. What do you count your lucky stars for? Tell us in the comment section or send us an email at learningenglish@voanews.com. And that's all for this week's Words and Their Stories. Until next time, I'm Ana Mateo.
I'm Dan Friedel, and you're listening to the Learning English Podcast. Here in the United States, we are coming off a week where a lot of people spent time looking up at the sky. There was a solar eclipse. Ana Mateo is here now to talk with us about a saying that also has to do with looking toward the heavens.
Dan, we are talking about thanking our lucky stars.
And what does that saying mean?
Well, it is a way to express appreciation for some good fortune. It comes from the old belief that the way the stars and planets move in the sky affect what happens in our lives here on Earth.
It sounds a bit like a superstition, right?
That's true. But people have all kinds of superstitions. You can have a lucky rabbit's foot or lucky socks. Maybe you always eat chicken on Tuesday because you think it'll bring you a good day on Wednesday. So thinking stars have something to do with our fortune is the same.
Yeah, I do have a special baseball hat I wear if my team is in an important game. Let me ask you, Ana, if there are any other ways people who speak English discuss lucky stars?
Well, you can use the same expression, though with a different word. You can say, count my lucky stars. Using the word count instead of thank does not change the meaning at all. And some people say, thank heavens, instead of thanking the stars. You might hear people also say, thank God as well.
That's good information. And I count my lucky stars that I get to speak with you each week. It's one of my favorite things about working for VOA Learning English. I'm glad you could join me today, Ana.
Aw, Dan, thanks a lot. I count my lucky stars too that we are coworkers. That is a good example. It's great to talk to you each week too. Have a great week, and I'll talk to you soon. Bye.
And that's the Learning English Podcast for today. Thanks again, Ana. And thanks to all my VOA colleagues for their work on today's program.
Most importantly, thank you for listening. I'm Katie Weaver.
And I'm Dan Friedell.